Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh, 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 man. Oh yeah. Saturday, 365 days of motivation, personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rowe, and a group coming to you live. We got Brother Hassan on deck today, Sister Kristen. Black August, much, much more. Stay with me, y'all. Come on. All the friends. Brothers and sisters, there is no greater love, no better love. You hear me? No greater love, no better love than for self and time. We got to start loving ourselves again. That's good. Then again, listen, you know all the stuff that we do, right? Stuff that we do in the dark that need to come to light. All those things that we do as African Americans that we continue to do because of the conditioning and the state of mind that we in the country. Back to our community. Bring accountability back. Right? When we recognize what we need to do as individuals collectively, and then how do we plan to do that? You said from the market. Well, it's simple. What's it? Political agenda. Politics. On a national level, and then internationally as well. Got to put that. So we have to do this. I need to get the resources in the hands of the people that can do something for our people, right? We need resources. We need those institutions that define our own reality, and we need help. We do. If you go into any city or any community that's a majority of African American living, guess what? You're going to find it. You'll see it. And we're going to eradicate poverty one person, one community, one family at a time. But we got to do the work of getting the agenda done. The E is economics. We got to have an economic agenda, an economic platform that speaks to our need. We got to understand money, capitalism, how it works, investments, how it works, and truly how to save money. Got to do it. We're going to have to save, y'all. We got to learn how to use this money to help enhance our situation. Because once we eradicate poverty, we're on our way, and then we can do some reconstruction within our minds and within our hearts on how we go about engaging one another in our families and in our communities. Next is the A. That powerful A is athletics, which is health, wellness, fitness, nutrition. You got to push away from the table. You got to have some good habits, right? Dietary habits that help you to become the best person that you can be, right? And so that's fitness, mental health, physical health, emotional health, and wellness is important as we continue to strive for the best parts of ourselves in family and in community. So having a fitness plan, a fitness and health, a diet, right, routine, so to speak, that really looks at how you're going to take care of yourself physically and mentally. Next, it's the C, which is culture, relevant cultural programs. Those programs that really help us, guide us, help direct us, help form shape, right, to our morals and our values, that we have some rules of engagement within our communities, that we start to change our behaviors and our habits toward one another. And culture can do that. Oh, it does so much for a community, right? Relevant cultural programs that help our young people to become strong, right, confident in themselves, and so they can have the attitude that I can do anything that I put my mind to, supported by my family, my personal will, and my community. And you can't go wrong with that. And lastly, it's the E. It's a comprehensive education. That's what we're going to get to today. Support education because knowledge is power. We have Dr. Bruce coming up in a couple of weeks. We got Dr. Rogers coming up. So it's important that you understand how important education is. But we got Brother Hassan today who's going to come on and educate us, and he's going to give us more information about the issues that's going on in Virginia prisons. I'm sure they're going on all around the country where our people mainly are captive, some by force and some by choice, but we got to change that. And so then we're going to talk about with Sister Krista, we're going to do a presentation and a dedication, and then we'll finish it off with Black August. So that's what we got on tap for today. Stay tuned. Call a friend. Tell a friend. You can't go wrong. It's Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Stan Mack in a moment. Be right back. Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
All right, that's right, Brother Stan is right. We need institutions that define our own reality. And we got to do the work of doing that. Nobody else is going to do that for us. So we have to be steadfast in our engagement in helping our communities to get better. Now we're going to go over to the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. Brother George is off today. He's vacationing with his lovely wife. So we're going to give him the week off as he's at a conference. But he'll be back next week for the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. But our Kwanzaa segment for today is unity. We need unity in our families, within ourselves first, right? Within our personalities, we're going to have to unify, right? Put our best person forward, right? Umoja is unity. We're going to have that unity within ourselves and then within our families and within our communities. And we have to do that work of really working together to unify. And now for our Willie Lynch segment coming up in just a second. We have some technical difficulties, but we'll get back to it in just a minute. So in the meantime, as we continue to move forward with the show, I'm going to see if I can bring Sister Krista in. Sister Krista is going to be coming in very shortly. I can find her on deck to bring Sister Krista in. I'll bring Brother Hassan. Oh, Sister Krista is there. Sister Krista, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good evening. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We've got a great show today. We got Brother Hassan Shabazz coming up to give us some information to continue to educate us. And, of course, you're going to do your dedication later on in the show, and then we'll talk about Black August. Are you ready to bring Brother Hassan in?
Yes, Brother Hassan is a member of Freedom Over Everything. You know, he, last time we spoke, he was still incarcerated and finishing up his sentencing, and now he's home. He's been home for 2 to 3 weeks, 2.5, 3 weeks now, and already motion doing a plethora of positive things that's given back to the community. So we're glad to have him home and in the flesh and just being able to continue on the path of restoring and giving back.
All right. Thank you. Brother Hassan, welcome home. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Welcome
Can
to the
me?
Show and welcome home, brother. We're glad to have you back on the block.
Hey, listen, I don't know if you is as glad as I am to be back. Honestly, man, I really, first and foremost, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be on the show again, to follow up on what we did about three weeks ago, and
yes,
talking about House Bill 5148. But before I do that, I just want to, first and foremost, give the greetings to everybody out there. I want peace and solidarity to all of the Unified family that's listening. I really, really enjoy every aspect of what you all are doing, man. Honestly, you know, I couldn't even be more prouder to be here today, to be able to have an opportunity to speak to everyone. And you spoke about Moja, the principle of unity, which we believe is something that should guide us in all that we do. For me, this is a process of unifying, right? Because the only way we can unify is we have to get to know one another. And so this is a process of me introducing not only this aspect of myself, but also introducing and representing a multitude of men and women who are incarcerated, who are going through a particular ordeal right now. And there are many people within the community that are coming to their aid. And within that assistance, we're finding the ability to be able to unify. And that does not come without struggle, right? Because there's no such thing as unity without struggle. You know, when you're talking about unifying, you have to find the commonality that you possess rather than the differences. Because if you focus on the differences, then the possibility of you unifying is going to be slim to none. So we have to be focusing on what we have in common. And so for us, you know, we see ourselves as being oppressed people. And a little bit later, we're going to be talking about Black August. And Black August is all about fighting against racial oppression. And so it all ties in together. It's all one thing. And so, you know, I just want to say that I appreciate the opportunity and thank you for having me.
You're welcome, brother, and thank you. And again, welcome home. It's work to be done, right? There's some work that we have to do collectively, and also some work that we have to continue to do on ourselves. So I'll turn it over to you, and you can get started with the segment on the House Bill 5148, and then we'll turn it over to Sister Crystal.
Brother Hassan Shabazz, I appreciate it.
It's on you, brother.
Yeah, I'm here.
You're welcome.
Right on. I want to explain a little bit about House Bill 5148 to the people. For those who may not have heard it last time, just in a nutshell, briefly, what that bill was a bill to address the amount of good time that prisoners could earn towards their rehabilitation while they're incarcerated. And a lot of the propaganda that has been spread around about this bill that was sponsored by Delegate Don Scott, who actually did 7 years in federal prison himself, who is now a delegate who I recently attended a rally at Bell Tower where he spoke. But that being said, House Bill 5148 was all about allowing prisoners to obtain more good time than they were already earning towards their rehabilitation while they were incarcerated. And so initially, since 1995, prisoners here in Virginia have been only earning 4.5 days for every 30 days that they serve toward good time. And so that hasn't been a really great motivator. Most of the guys who have been rehabilitating themselves, reforming themselves, transforming themselves have been doing it not for the good time, but they've been doing it because they want to. They want to see a difference. They want change. They want to go back into their communities and do something different. And they want to rebuild the broken down and downtrodden communities that they had taken apart and tearing down. And so those guys were just reforming themselves. I'm one of those guys. I've never received any good time but 4.5 days for every 30 days that I served. And I did that for 23 years. Out of a 26-year sentence, 4.5 days took off approximately 2.5 years of my sentence, right? But I work hard and diligently to show myself worthy and approved to be a member of this society, regardless of how much good time that I was given. But for other guys, we need a bigger, a greater motivator. And I see that Don Scott saw that. And so with developing this bill, he wanted to take it from 4.5 days to 15 days, right? Approximately 9.5 days more that he wanted to give prisoners per month towards rehabilitating themselves, to inspire them, to encourage them, to promote reformation and rehabilitation and justice reinvestment toward themselves and toward their community. And so when he put the bill out, it was met with immediate opposition. Immediate opposition, mostly from the Republican side of the aisle. There were some questions from the Democratic side, but majority of the Republican side of the aisle were the ones who stepped up to say, no, we don't want to give offenders any more good time than what they're already ready getting. The jury sends them to whatever they sentence them to, and that's what they're supposed to get. And what people don't understand is that the good time has nothing to do with the crime that you committed. The good time is not about the crime that you committed. The good time comes into play after you have committed that crime, and then you move forward to rehabilitating yourself. You move forward to striving to complete your treatment program, right? To make sure that you have the proper education, to make sure that you're doing whatever community service that you can do, even within prison, whatever service that you can provide, whether it be in a reentry community, whether it be a peer mentor, whether it be a tutor, whatever it is, that good time was supposed to be there to inspire guys to get involved. And so what would you want to oppose that for? Why would you not want to reward good behavior in prison? Why would you not want to make sure that when these guys come home, that they're better than when they came in? So that leads me into this whole thing about Black August as well, and we're going to get into that in a minute. But just to continue on with House Bill 5148, what happened was in March they notified about 3,000 to 4,000 people that they were about to get the good time. Over 1,000 of those guys had mixed charges. They had violent crimes and they had nonviolent crimes. Well, this bill was only for nonviolent crimes. And so immediately Delegate Robert Bell put in a bill to say that he wanted to repeal it completely at first. That failed. That failed in March. Fast forward to June. When the budget comes in, when the budget came in, the budget session came in, he also introduced the bill again. But this time he said he wanted to nullify for mixed charges. That also failed. At the end of the budget session, the governor comes in, and when the governor comes in, what he said is that, no, I'm going to make an amendment to this bill. I want to amend it so that guys with mixed charges, that mean they have a violent felony, what's considered to be a violent felony, and they have a nonviolent charge. And what the amendment literally said was that had mixed charges, you would be ineligible for the good time. Now, for 3 months, the guys had been notified that they were going to get the good time. So their families were putting together home plans, making sure they had jobs. They were putting aside funds and finances. They were making sure that the guys had a place to stay. They were making sure they had anything lined up for their loved ones. And you had some loved ones who were on their sick beds, on their deathbeds, waiting for their loved ones to come home. You have little children, boys and girls, waiting for their mothers and fathers to come home. And after having been notified in March that they were coming, in June, they take it back. And they say, no, when July the 1st come around, you will not be eligible for this good time. And so this crushed everybody. This crushed over 1,000 people who were getting out immediately and about 4,000 more who were in the system and depending on this bill for that good time. And so now you have loved ones who don't know if they're going to make it to see their loved one come home. You have children who were waiting for their parents to come home thinking that they were going to be there, and now they are not. And so this is, it has sent a cataclysmic earthquake through our community, of which we may not feel the tremors and the effects of it until a couple of years from then, because we just don't know that dynamic. There were some guys who were getting ready to come home who can make changes in their community. There were some guys who were getting ready to come home that have the power and influence in the community to say, no, we're going to stop that. Put the gun down. We're not going to do that. We have guys like that right now sitting in prison who can come home and be more of an asset than a detriment, and more of an asset than a liability, as they were when they were first out on the street, because those guys have taken this time to reform themselves. They've done all their treatment programs. They've created their own programs, like Freedom Over Everything, right? This is something that's necessary. And we proceed to do that, even though we're stepped on at every turn. And so that, in a nutshell, is what has taken place. What I want to say is that there's a movement towards striving to correct this. There has been a lawsuit filed by the ACLU on behalf of the entire prison population. There are rallies that are going to be taking place, speak outs, engagement. We want people to come out and support. I believe on the 28th, there is an event that's going to be down in Norfolk. And we'll make sure that everybody gets that link and gets the flyer so that we can gain the support that we need there. But we're going to be doing this all over Virginia. This is not going to stop here. And this is why we're very thankful to the members of the community that have stepped up to the plate, that are coming out. Thankful to organizations such as yours that are allowing us a voice, giving us an opportunity to be able to speak truth to power as it pertains to our oppression, as it pertains to our reformation, as it pertains to our upliftment. I thank you very much. And this the type of things that we want to do within our community is similar to the grandfather of Miss Krista Ellison, who she's going to come on. I'm going to let her introduce him. I'm going to let her pay tribute to him, because what he did within the community is the exact same thing that we striving to do in the community, you know, and this is what it's all about. You know, it's all about upliftment. You know, it's all about proceeding to stay in that vein. Doing no matter what it is that we need to do in order to accomplish the goal of liberation, right? And so, listen, I'm going to, right at this point in time, I'm going to kind of turn it over to Ms. Krista Ellison, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Freedom Over Everything. And she's been a very, very, very crucial and vital component to what we've been doing to strive to liberate ourselves. And I couldn't be more thankful to be her friend, to give counsel whenever I can, and to receive it as well. And so with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Krista Ellison so that she can give the tribute that her grandfather so much deserves.
Hello, I appreciate that very much. But I also feel like we should not have to look at each other as heroes. We should not be looking at each other as obsessed as pillars of the community. These are things that we should already be doing. The work that we do, the ministry that we are doing, this should be done with the plethora of people, you know, not just so much looked at as we stand out as the leaders or whatever. We all should be leaders within our own community. I did want to pay tribute to my grandfather, who did not get any highlights at the time that he was doing the things that he was doing in the community. He wasn't looked at like a hero or anything like that. He was a very humble man. He stayed to himself. He was very family oriented. And you know, he lived to be 94 years old. He passed away this past July 30th. He was born January 14th of 1928. He was adopted shortly after his birth. He was born in Harlem, New York. And as a boy, he would run everywhere that he went. So people in the community saw that he was running everywhere that he went, and he made it into a club of his own, and he, it was called the Hop Jump Club back then, and the group of kids in the neighborhood, they would all take off running for miles together everywhere throughout the Charleston community and Charleston, South Carolina. My grandfather went to college at South Carolina State College in Orangeburg, South Carolina, in 1946, and he majored in architectural engineering. President of his senior class, he was the editor-chief of his college newspaper, and he was Omega Phi Psi fraternity. He was the superintendent of the Sunday school church, and he also wrote poems for the college newspaper. He was part of the Army ROTC program and shortly graduated with the degree in architectural engineering with his bachelor's. After graduating, he did join the U.S. Army, where he was deployed to Korea, where they had the back then during the Korea conflict. And on Pork Chop Hill, he saved many lives fighting, helping drowning and injured and wounded soldiers. After he fought in the Army, after that he came back home to Charleston, South Carolina, where he married. He had children. My father was his firstborn from a previous relationship before college. And he won a 7th first place award for his running again track and field. He broke world records holding with Jesse Owens, and he came in 2nd place against Jesse Owens on one of his records in long jump, jumping 26 feet 5 inches. My grandfather was deemed the fastest man in the world during that time. He also was a natural herbalist, and during the time, all this time growing up, he endured a lot of racism while in the military. Once after that, he came home. He was a herbalist. He also helped develop and start a show called Jump Time. It was before Soul Train. It was the same concept and everything, but it was during that time before, where the community would come out and dance, and teenagers was able to broadcast on a famous television show for their community in Charleston, South Carolina. My grandfather also was known as the popular DJ and had records hop for the community to come out and just be able to dance and keep community events going on. He was an herbalist, and he also had a book called The Art of Wisdom, where he collected his poems since he was a young boy. And I say all of this to say, and I have to highlight him because not only did he do that, he also helped with the rehabilitation of inmates like myself, and he also was getting guys who was wrongly convicted freed from prison, like myself. So I highlight him because a lot of things that we do in our community to kind of uplift our community, is go unnoticed a lot of times, or you're considered, you know, a rebel when you go against the grain, when you're not a citizen, or not a perfect citizen, or you're not following the rules of the government, and you do things unorthodox. But we're living in a time where unorthodox is what we need. We're not in a time where we can follow or the rhythm of what the government has, because the laws is not set for us. So we most definitely have to work together and holding each other accountable, so we can all thrive and live and write laws that includes us. My short little tribute to my grandfather, and just to see the like-mindedness, and that the apple doesn't fall from the tree. I learned a lot of these things after he passed. I didn't know a lot of the things that he was recognized for during, you know, in his living. But once I read over his obituary, I too learned that he had a whole lot of things in common that I'm doing today. So I did want to, you know, point that out.
All right. Well, thank you, Sister Krista. What is your grandfather's name?
Arthur Brown Ellison Sr. was his name.
All right.
Yeah. Arthur Brown Ellison Sr. His most prevalent line was that, do unto others as you would have them to do unto you.
That's right. And so is it Arthur Ellison Brown?
It's Arthur Brown Ellison.
Okay, I'm sorry, Senior. Arthur Brown Ellison Senior.
Yes.
We acknowledge you today on the show, and your granddaughter, great granddaughter, whatever one that is, Krista. You on the show because you're following in his footsteps. So we say thank you, and we honor him today. And I wanted to just acknowledge, right, that we have to recognize the works of our ancestors and the work that they've done. That's what the community network is all about, to recognize the accomplishments. Now, who would have known that your granddad ran against Jesse Owens? So powerful work, great community advocate, and a great man overall. Thank you, Sister Krista. I'm going to bring Brother Hassan back in. Brother Hassan, are you there?
Yeah, listen, I'm
right
here, man, and I really just enjoyed that. Like, I really
Absolutely.
Did, because I was aware that Mr. Ellison had ran against Jesse Owens. Man, I had no idea that I was entertaining his granddaughter. I honestly, that's a very large and great feat when you think about that and that time period and everything else that he was able to accomplish. For me, that is the perfect transition into black office, right? Because he was an abolitionist. And I believe that all of us that are doing the work of prison reform, reformation, as it pertains to our you know, our freedom, we are abolitionists, because as we know, the 13th Amendment clearly states that slavery has been abolished except under the circumstances of one who's been duly convicted of a crime. And so by the Constitution, slavery is allowed as long as they can say that you were convicted of a criminal act. And so that in abolition, to me, is a great thing, man, and it's a great lineage, and it's an honor for me to be in the presence of Mr. Ellison's granddaughter, and then to see her moving in the same vein and walking in, you know, his footsteps. And what I want to do is I want to kind of just educate everyone a little bit about black office and what that is, because when I was speaking about it a little bit earlier, one of my family members said, well, were you talking about black office? He said, what's black office? And I said, wow. I said, it's amazing to me how many people don't know what black office is. And so I just want to kind of go into that a little bit, right? But Black August is an annual commemoration, and it's a prison-based holiday to remember Black freedom fights and political prisoners, and to highlight the Black resistance against racial oppression. And it takes place during the entire month, calendar month of August. And really what Black August, the crux of Black August and where it stems from not only just prison justice, but we're also talking about political prisoners, freedom fighters. And at that time when Black August began, it began based on the works of individuals such as George Jackson. And if anybody knows who George Jackson is, George Jackson is a Black Panther and revolutionary who was incarcerated, who did so much work from prison. It's very hard to believe the amount of time, effort, and energy that he put into what he did as far as raising the political awareness and consciousness of Black people from prison at such a young age. And we're talking about Black men in their 20s. Like, most people don't even know, like, the Black Panthers were young, really young. We look at activists nowadays, and we start to look at individuals who are out there pushing it, and for a while, you know, the young involvement within activism has fell off. But now when you look at the movement and you see Black Lives Matter, and you see a Freedom Over Everything, Virginia Prison of Conscience, the Virginia Prison Justice Network, this is based around youth, right? It's based around the younger guys who are striving to step up, younger men and women, that is, who are striving to step up and take their rightful place and position who are fighting against racial oppression. And so there are a lot of other things that took place, in Black August. And, I mean, just for information's sake, we'll talk about a few of them, right? One of them was Mildred Europa Taylor. And I don't know if anybody ever heard about Mildred Europa Taylor, but Mildred Europa Taylor was doing reverse freedom rides. And what this encompassed was that when segregationists were striving to trick Blacks from the South into moving North. And so the reverse freedom ride was like, hold up, wait a minute. No, you're not going to trick us out of our property and push us up North. No, what we're going to do is we're going to come back, and what we're going to do is we're going to obtain our property, and we're going to stay on this land that our ancestors worked. And if we can, we're going to take that, and we're going to build something that we could call our own. And so if you haven't ever heard of Mildred Europa Taylor, she was the first wife of Frederick Douglass. Right? I don't know if anybody even knew that. Right?
That's power.
She was the one that made his long. Yes, sir. She was the one that made his longing desire for freedom possible, right? She was right there with him the whole time. And so, like, we have to really be conscious of our ancestors, man. Like, when you talk about the ancestors, I spoke to my family the other day about this, and I said that if we don't move in the vein of our ancestors, and we start, and not only do we, we was talking about property. We was talking about not selling our property. And I was saying, we're not selling the property because our ancestors, our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers and grandmothers, they acquired that property so that their family could have something. But when you sell that out what you do is you trample upon the memory and the tradition of the ancestors, and when you do that, you're going to be, you can't receive a blessing for that. You're going to be forever cursed until you get back in alignment with your true self, right? Sankofa, you need to go back. You need to go back to your roots. You need to go back to who you are, right? Black August is a part of that, for us us being able to understand our culture, understand the history of our struggle through racial oppression. I heard you speak about Willie Lynch, right? Black August is all about fighting against the Willie Lynch, the Willie Lynch theory, right? About how we can take a people and turn them into a commodity and have them maintain themselves as a commodity for centuries. For centuries, right? And when we look at ourselves right now, what do we see ourselves, right? Are we really truly free? Do we really have the benefits of a citizen here in America? You know, do we really have the things that a free people is supposed to have? And when we look at our communities financially, when we look at our communities, when you talk about poverty. Poverty, yes, is one part of poverty is financial, but the other part of poverty is the inability or the lack of mental nourishment, right? That makes you impoverished, right? The inability to understand your roots and where you come from, so that you can't understand where you're going, and then you get trapped in a vicious cycle of poverty where you don't spread generational wealth. You spread generational poverty to your children. You spread generational poverty to your grandchildren. And the next thing you know, all you're doing is you being stuck on that hamster wheel, and you constantly being recycled into the system, right? Constantly being recycled in a way where you are more of a commodity to these multi-billion dollar corporations and United States of America Incorporated, right? Because now you're bringing wealth into that economy, but at the end of the day, when you live and you work and then you die, most of the time you have nothing to show for it. Most of the time you have nothing to show for it, and it's a sad reality, right? I'm giving my testimony today. Like, honestly, I'm so fortunate to have the family that I have, because there was property. There's property that's been in my family for generations, and they were getting all types of offers to sell out, to sell their property, and my father stepped up and he said no. He said, I'm not going to sell it. He said, because when my son come home, he's going to need a place to live. Do you know that this has been greatest privileges and experiences that I have ever had in my life, to be able to come home and not have to pay rent? To come home and not have to pay anybody rent for where I live. Right? That to me is a tribute to my past. And it is indicative of my future, because that's exactly what I want to promote and exactly what I want to do, right? We got to create generational wealth in the place of generational poverty. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is through education. And so this part of me being on here and speaking about House Bill 5148, being on here and being able to hear about Mr. Ellison, you know, being on here to be able to speak about Black August, and you know, this is a privilege for me, and it's something that I know that I was born to do. I was born to be an advocate. I was born to be an activist. I was born to be a revolutionary. I was born to be a freedom fighter. And with all that being said, now it's time to find out where are all the other revolutionaries. Where are all the other freedom fighters? Where are all the other liberators? Right? Because we should all be thinking that way. How do I liberate my family from this? How do I liberate my community from this? How then do I liberate my state, my nation? And then how do I liberate the world? This is what it's all about. But it starts with self. It starts with yourself. It starts with you. What are you going to do today, different from what you did yesterday, that's going to put more into your brain that allows you to become free, that allows you to become, that allows you to free others, right? We have to become the new Harriet Tubman and form an underground railroad to escape economic slavery, right? To form an underground railroad to escape immorality, right? To form an underground railroad to escape all of the things that oppress us, that we can't see, that are not physical change, but manifest from the mind, right? How do we do that? And it's through education. It's through education. It's through learning. It's through sharing. It's through building and creating and influencing one another to do more and greater works, positive things. And so, you know, that's my spiel on that. I'm not going to sit up here and talk forever, but I encourage people to read more about Black August. Like, I could sit here and talk about Black August for days, but we don't have that type of time. But what I wanted to do was just spark your mind into moving forward to strive to learn more about your culture than what you did yesterday. A large part of your culture, I might add, right? A large part of your culture that has everything to do with what we're going through right now today. The problems that we have in our community, you know, these are not new problems. These are not new problems. You know, the game never changed, only the player. The truth never changed, only the sayer. And so I'm here in the tradition of my forefathers, my elders, to give the truth in a way in which the people can see it, say that it's the truth, and then go out and move out on it, man. Move out on it. So I implore you, just move forward. Learn a little bit more about your history than what you knew yesterday. Strive to be better than what you were yesterday. And in the end, we're going to find that unity. We're going to find that umoja, because if we're all striving to be better, then we all got something to come. And with that, we can build on.
You got that right. Thank you, Brother Hassan. Now, before we transition into a question and answer, I want to just kind of have a dialogue with you. About, we'll go back to House Bill 5148 first. And you mentioned about for the guys and they're doing their therapy or their treatment, right? Is that a part of the process for good time, or is it what is the criteria for receiving good time as it stands?
Mhm. Mhm. Well, the criteria for receiving good time, they have a whole system set up for distributing good time in when you're incarcerated. So, like, when you first come in, you're going to sit down with your counselor. They're going to give you a review. When they give you that review, what they're going to do is establish a treatment plan for you. That treatment plan is about whether or not you need to get your GED. What's your education? All right, we got to get that off. We got to get that out straight. Okay, now we're talking about your education. Okay, what other problems do you have? Do you have substance abuse problems? Do you have any addiction? Do you have anything? Do you have anger management that's needed? We're going to put you in anger management program then. That's a part of your treatment. You're going to get points for that. You get points for each one of these, right? That's going to determine how much good time you're eligible. And then lastly, but not least, as it pertains to our reformation in prison, is that you got to have a job, so that you got to be working. They want to make sure that you understand the principle of work and what it means to work. And many guys that I've known that go in prison and they work a job for 45 cents, 35 cents, 27 cents, an hour now, an hour, right? You can't buy soup in prison for 30. You got to buy the soup in prison is going to cost you 35 cents, right? So 1 hour of work may buy you one soup. But it's the principle of it. It's the principle of creating a work ethic. And so with all these different things within the treatment program, it's designed to ensure that you are on the right path, that you stay on that path until from the day you're in until the day that you get out. You have to be charge free, which means that in order to get the maximum good time that you can get, you cannot catch charges in prison. So they want to discourage the type of conduct that brought you in to begin with, right? And many of the guys I know, many of them go through their whole bid, man, and they don't get one charge, right? They go through their whole time in prison doing the right thing, but really receiving no reward. And that's what this bill was about. The bill was about rewarding guys for the good things that they've done and not just punishing them for the bad things. Punitive corrections does not work. Let's get that straight. Trying to punish somebody
right.
out of wrong conduct does not work. First and foremost, whenever you take anything from a man, you have to replace it with something. But when they take you out of that, if all they're going to do is punish you, is that what they're replacing it with? If they're not replacing it with any healing, if they're not replacing it with any rehabilitation, and you just replace it, you just punishing me, whatever I did, punish whoever I did it to, right? Most of the time, unwarranted. You know, most of the time unwarranted, and sometimes it is. But my whole point is that if you're going to take what I did and incarcerate me for it and then punish me to correct me, to strive to make me change my ways, most of the time that just does not work. In fact, I would say 100% of the time it doesn't work. All it does is make that person more angry, more bitter, more sour, and when he get out, he's not going to have developed the skills that he needed in order to be a valuable and vital member within his community and in society, man. A productive citizen, as they say. So you know, that's a lot. It has a lot of going, a lot that's going on with that. But this bill was just one step in the right direction. And for them to trounce upon it like that, you know, it just crushed the hopes of a lot of guys. And then some guys were saying, well, why am I going to be charged 3-4 now, man? They ain't giving me nothing anyway.
Right.
You see, that you don't want that type
right.
of attitude in prison because it creates a bad environment, a culture that it's not a culture of rehabilitation, right? It becomes a culture of degradation and damnation. And that's not something that we want. And so we got to strive to fight against that and do what we can to make sure that this gets corrected.
True. And that's why in our platform, we need a political agenda, right? We need to support those initiatives, right, that offer incentives to those who are incarcerated. And here's the good thing, brother, and you mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be able to get to a place where we understand that these men and women are earning time, right? They're not just giving time for showing up. They have to earn their time. Is that correct?
That's right, my brother. That's right. That's right. There's nothing,
so nobody's
nothing,
giving
nothing
them.
Giving.
Right. Right. So can you talk about that a little bit before we transition to another part of the show? But I want to be clear, right, that we need to support those initiatives that are going to make our men and women better when they come home. And next, also, and lastly for me, is that I really think that our community need treatment plans and our families need treatment plans, right, to really redirect ourselves at home, right, and in the community so that everybody got a plan of action. Right, we should have family treatment plans, right? And we could change the word treatment if you want to, for those who want to be technical. But we need to understand what the issues are that we face as individuals, as families collectively, and then as communities as well. So before we wrap up on House Bill today, right, what can can our listeners do to support the initiative?
Well, listen, one thing is for sure, because one thing I know is that there are some people that were placing, that were shaking within the Senate as far as the Democrats were concerned, because that's the only way that it could have failed twice and then get passed at the end, which means that there was a trade-off that went on. That means that the Democrats that flipped their votes, they obtained something out of the budget that they weren't initially given. They were holding out, and they used that as a tool to be able to obtain whatever it is that they wanted out of the budget. And so then they flipped their vote, and that's how the governor was able to get it passed. And so there was some talks that was going on behind the scenes that people didn't see, that we probably still have not known about, because we have I'm not sure which senators flipped their vote at this particular time, but we can find that out. But what we can do to support it is to ensure that, man, listen, I was never an advocate for voting. I was feeling like, ah, man, my vote, it don't really matter. And, you know, I used to feel that way a long time ago. I wasn't even political. But prison turned me into a political prisoner. And then, and what we need to understand about that is that we are all political prisoners, because there's politics that surround your conviction and your sentencing. And that if you don't know anything about the politics that you're dealing with, and this goes for everybody in the community too, if you don't understand anything about the laws and how they are made and how a bill is formed and how this happens, if you don't understand that, then you will forever be a slave to those politics, because there will be people who will be making calls upon your life that you have no knowledge of or have no understanding of. So let's get that out of the way. So be more educated, right? That's one thing that people can do. The second thing you can do is that after you educate yourself, then go out and vote. Vote in your respective jurisdiction for the people who are standing up for the causes that you are with. Whatever it is that you're striving to accomplish, then you need to back those people. And then if they put their word on it and they say, well, this is what I'm going to do when I'm elected, and then they don't do that, then you hold them accountable. You have to be active in civic engagement. You have to be more active in communicating with your legislature, communicating with the people, with your representatives, with your senator, with your congressman, with your delegates. Find out who that is in your neighborhood. Find out who that is in your respective jurisdiction, in your district. And then go out and vote in November, because what the Republicans want to do is they want to take over. They already took over the House. They already have the governorship. The only thing that they don't have right now is the Senate. They want a completely red governorship, right? They want a red governor. They want a red House, and they want a red Senate. And then they're going to start repealing some of the progress that we've made over these past few years. This is something that we cannot allow happen. We can't allow the progress that we've made to go back. We have to go forward. It has to be forward ever, backward never for us. Forward ever, backward never for us. It has to be that. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves in a worse predicament than our ancestors, because it won't be physical chains and bondage that we're facing. It will be economic bondage, right? It will be a bondage to moral depravity. It will be a bondage toward chasing an American dream that has actually become an American nightmare, and then we have to find our way out of it. And so, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Don't wait for your loved ones to get incarcerated for you to step up to the plate to do something about people being mass incarcerated. Don't wait for that, because it can happen. And for many people, it has happened, and it didn't hit them until it hit home. So these are the things that the community can do, you know, and just make sure that you stay connected. Stay connected to this podcast, right? Stay connected to others like it. Stay connected to others who are willing to assist and give that knowledge and that wisdom. so that you can develop an understanding about what you're going through, right? And that's my spiel on that. And I hope that I did it justice.
Absolutely, thank you, brother. And again, that is why we need political agendas around the country. You got to understand American politics work and how we could be effective at shifting things, right? Like you said, they had a backroom conversation and got a trade-off that changed changed lives for our people. And we have to be able to put pressure on people in order to get change. I think, again, if you want to get change in this country, you're going to have some agendas and some objectives that change the trajectory of how our people are being treated and how we allow ourselves to be treated as well. Also, I have an additional question for you. When you talked about land, right, and you talked about how your family has preserved the land for generations. And so as African-Americans in this country, it's imperative and important that we understand the importance of the value of holding land, right, and land for, like what you said, that family members can live on and farm on or whatever we need to do with the land. Please, if you're listening, do not sell your family's land to other people, right? If you do anything, sell it to your family members, preserve it and develop it. The brother just told us that his family preserved the land so he had a home to come to. Land is so important. Do not sell your land, people, for $20,000 or $15,000 for some cash, right? Land is the basis for all independence if you understand the value of it and what you could do with it as a resource. So what do you have to say about that? Because, brother, you're experiencing it right now, the importance of having and holding land.
Listen, I can't understate it. I'm here right now at a property that when I got here, I didn't realize how much work it was going to take. But my grandfather taught me that heaven is a workplace. It's not something that you just give. It's something that you have to work for, right? Because he believed that faith without works is dead, being alone. So you can have faith that you're going to get to heaven, but if you ain't putting in the work, you won't see it. And so for me, when I got here and I seen how much work needs to be done and trees grew up that I hadn't seen in 20-some years and the hedges were so high, they were about 7 or 8 feet tall, and I had to go to work. I'm still working. I was working yesterday, working this morning, always striving to do a little bit every day to chip away at maintaining the legacy that had been left behind for me. Before I went in, I met with my great-grandmother in this house, and she told me that she wanted to keep this house so that if anybody in the family needed somewhere to stay, not just if you were incarcerated and you need somewhere to stay when you come home, if anybody fell on hard times or they got evicted or they needed somewhere to go, they could come here and they could stay. And they would have a place to stay free of charge, not having to pay nobody nothing, because this belongs to your family. Man, I was bored. I'm getting emotional right now just talking about it, because I'll be honest with you, man. I couldn't see myself having to start from scratch and go to a halfway house and have to deal with what a lot of brothers deal with. Man, this is taking a great weight off of my shoulders, and it's allowing me to stand here right now talking to you, speaking to you about my experience with my family, having kept something. Now look, it didn't go without opposition. Other members of my family wanted to sell the property so that we could get the money, because they were looking at instant gratification. They were looking at being able to take that money and do something else with it. Maybe take a vacation, right? Maybe, like, that's the type of mentality that you have to fight against, that you have to work against. But my father stood up and he said no. And he said, as a matter of fact, I'm going to pay these taxes on this property. And then I'm going to send an agreement out. And I sat in prison. Of course, I'm a certified paralegal. I sat in prison and I wrote down an interstate estate agreement, which means that that's an agreement without a will. Another thing is, make sure that you write out a will for whatever you own so that whoever you want it to go to, it goes to them. But I wrote out an interstate estate agreement to my family, and I told them, if you want to sell the property, we will buy it from you. And we will pay this much every month until we buy out your share of the property because we're going to keep this thing. And once they saw that we were very intent on doing so, the family stepped back and they said, okay, don't worry, you got it. You can have it. Because there's so much work that needs to be done to it. It's a four-bedroom
wow.
Victorian house over north side of Richmond that if we renovated it and built it up, it could be worth $300,000 to $500,000 right here. But if you don't have the vision to be able to see that far ahead, you only look at what you can get right now, and you only look at how much work needs to be done for you to keep it. Well, I don't care about the work. I'll work until I die in order to keep this property for whoever's coming behind me so that they will be able to say, I'm so happy that Hassan took care of this. You know?
That's right.
And so we all have to take that attitude. We all have to move in that vein, man. You know, what we got to do, we got to build Black Wall Street back up, right? We got to build it. You know, it
was
right. Black Wall
now
Street.
Now you're talking.
Black Wall Street
on,
in historic Jackson Ward, Black Wall Street in North Carolina, Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There was many Black Wall Street, right? And what we have to do is we have to make sure we honor our ancestors by carrying on that tradition.
I like that. Man, brother, I saw you've been a wealth of knowledge today. Also, lastly, I want to talk to you about Black August and how you learned about Black August and the information that you attained, you know, about that subject. How did you learn about it, and how would you be able to share that with other individuals who are now familiar with it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I would tell you this. You know, we live in the information age. Right, I learned about Black August the hard way. I learned about it by being in prison, reading about George Jackson, reading Soledad Brother, reading Blood in My Eye, reading the manuscripts that were written by George Jackson in prison, and then learning about everything else that took place in August. Right, the different events that occurred in August that most of us have no knowledge of. If you want to learn about Black August, Google it. Just Google it. And you will be surprised at how much information comes up about Black August. And it will be a plethora of information. You will be sitting there for days reading, right? And so that's how I learned about it, but that's how I proceed to learn, right? Learning different facts that I didn't know. And so take time. Research. You're in the information age. Everything is at your fingertips. Take your phone, go to Google, and put Black August in it. And then put Black August in it, then put Black August facts. And it's gonna take you into so much that you never knew, and you're gonna be sitting back saying, man, I didn't even know. I had no idea that we had did that. I had no idea that person was that significant to my existence right now. And that's what I would say. That's what I would do for so who have to do what I went through to learn about it. I learned about it by being affected by a particular type of oppression. But we are all faced with oppression. So Black August is something that we need to know. And so Google it. Yeah, Google it.
All right. Thank you, Brother Hassan, for that. And also, knowledge is power, right? And we know that now. And I think we have to invest in learning everything that we can about ourselves, about our history, about our culture, right? We learned about your grandparents today, right, and the importance of having grandparents who have invested in the future for us, but also Sister Krista's grandfather who got world records, you know. So there's some great things that's going on in our past. We have to acknowledge our ancestors. Let's look at going to the line. We got a few callers on the line, so I'd like to see if they got a question or comment for you. I'm going to start with 8502, 8502. Are you ready, Brother Hassan?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's go.
All right, 8502. You got a question or comment for Brother Hassan?
Yes, good afternoon to everyone on the line. I'd just
welcome,
like
brother.
To say is, you know, it's a pleasure listening to the brother because I understand very well where he's coming from. What we have to realize is that our brothers that are incarcerated, that was a plan. It's not that they're criminals, even though they may have did what was considered committing a crime, but the environment was created where that was what was going to happen to a certain portion of the population.
That's right. That's right.
So when oppression creates self-destructive behavior. When you're oppressed and there's no way out of that oppression, then your energy has to go somewhere. And it just goes in the wrong direction. So you see young people committing crimes. You see older people drinking themselves to death. You see other people eating themselves to death with high blood pressure and diabetes. These are
tell
all self-destructive behaviors.
Tell it.
That's right. That's right.
Created by oppression.
Speak on it.
And so, you know, it's not an accident when they so-called freed us that they put that stipulation in the 13th Amendment. They put it there because they intended to use it.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
They started using it right away with the convict lease system and peonage.
That's right.
That's
tell
right.
it, brother.
That's right. Speak on it.
You were the criminal because you was black. You was already a criminal. They just knew what if you create certain situations, you can predict the outcomes. Like I said once before, if you take a classroom full of children and every day you give those children a recess and give them three cookies and some milk, except for one child, you don't give little Johnny any cookies and milk for no reason. He just has to sit there and watch the other kids eat their cookies and milk. Before too long, little Johnny's going to hurt somebody.
Speak on it, bro. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's real.
Criminalizing
that is real.
Thank you for
true.
Listening
and
to me.
Yeah. Oh, stay with us for a minute, brother. Now, they're still doing it now. Brother Hassan talked about, what did you say, 32 cents an hour?
That's right, brother. That's right. Can't even buy a soup with it. Can't even buy a soup with it.
So we know that in Virginia, the inmates are producing all kind of products and services, right, that they get little to no income for, right? And so that's no different from convict leasing, right? Our people are still fuel and fodder for the system, and we got to change that. So how do we do
that? I just wanted to mention
Go ahead, brother.
The brother said about having a place to stay. In a lot of places like New York, if you live in public housing, your children can't come out of jail and come and stay with you.
That's right.
They can't. If they come out, they can't. If they come to your house, you'll get evicted.
On the application for public housing, it asks you to give up your father's or the father of your child's social security number or what his driver's license legislate in order for you to even get child care or in order for you to get food stamps, you have to give up who the father of the child is.
That's right. That's right. And if he's if he was incarcerated, he can't come and stay there.
If you've been arrested and you get out of jail and you can't go to your mother's house.
Talk about it. Speak about that. You know?
Yeah.
Unless you own the property, you can't even go there.
They're gonna hit you with no trespass. So
and you go back to prison. Yeah. You can go back to prison for that. Going into a zone where you're not allowed. Man.
So the people... The people who enslaved us for almost 300 years created a justice system.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. How you think that's going to turn out for you?
That's real, bro. That's real. The people who have done the most injustice create a system of justice.
Mm. Yeah.
And call the victims of their injustice criminals.
Mm.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's shine the light on that. Sister Krista, you had something you wanted to say?
Uh-huh.
Let's bring the sister in. Dismantling the system, you know, is what's needed. You know, it starts with the application that we fill out. I'm, you know, studying on Ghana, and one of the things that I learned about Ghana is that they're trying to do the same over there. It's create a governmental system where they're creating housing for single women. But the men and the women over there bound together and decline any involvement of building a government system on assisted living housing in Ghana. And they already built the housing, and it sits for the last 20 years empty because they said they will not be under the government thumb. That's how you take a stand.
Wow. Right. I see that. Yes. Yes.
True.
I see that.
And again, when you own, right? So if we're living in public housing, right, which is a system in and of itself, if we begin to own the structures that we live in and nobody can tell us, right, what the rules will be, and we can set the rules for ourselves. So again, we have to have rules of engagement, right, that change the trajectory of how our people strive for what we call just to live, right? So we're striving for just survival. Now people are in survival mode, and we have to get out of that impoverished mindset, but we also have to get out of poverty, and we have to have strategies to do that. So, brother, if you have another comment, we're going to move on to and thank you so much for sharing. We're going to move on. I'm going to keep you on the line, though, because I like the dialogue that we got going on today. We got about 10 minutes left in the show. And I'm going over to 7487. We can bring them in. 7487.
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, welcome to the show. How are you?
Yeah.
Do you have a question
this
or comment?
Is Nana. I'm back again this week. Yeah, I was hoping that Barbara Bridges was going to be back, but I got some conversation today. I couldn't hardly hold on. I thought I was going to cry. The brother who was telling the story about the land, I got a question for you. What do you do? I'm in North Carolina. And when my father died, well, his family had over the years close to 300 acres. And
wow.
When he died, my mother ended up with, it was more than, he had like about 60 altogether, but he had about 30. Well, a couple of months ago, she sold her 30 acres. and to somebody outside of the family. My son is 40-something, and he just retired from the Coast Guard. So he went to her, and he asked her, don't sell the 30 acres to somebody out the family. Let the young people his age get together and form, you know, some kind of conglomerate for the 30 acres. Well, she sold it anyway. 2 days before his retirement money was final.
Wow.
So he could have gave he could have gave her the cash that she wanted. He is very bitter. He is very, very bitter. And I feel bad for him because I'm the one with my daddy's birthright. I was born on the land. And what can I say to help him be bitter? Because I just be not bitter. Because I just say, well, you know, she 91 and she didn't. She don't have no wealth mindset. So, what would you say as a young man? Cause I imagine you're probably somewhere close around my age.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Tell me something from your generation that you might say to make yourself not be mad at grandma. Because he don't even want to go to her house.
I think, okay, for one, I think that he has to understand that from her point of view and perspective, obviously, the land had been there for a while, right? For a long while, and not really anybody was doing, not really anybody was doing anything with the land, right? And sometimes situations can occur, and I'm sure that she was getting offers for the land for a long, long time. It's not the first time somebody has offered her or was willing to pay her for her land. And she may not say it, she may not vocalize it, and she held on for as long as she could. And she's an older woman. And so I do believe in respecting my elders no matter what, right?
Oh, yeah.
Whether they're right or they're wrong, I believe in that because sometimes, is a certain level of pressure that comes about in a situation like that, and that our the older people in our families and our in our households, they may not be able to do what my father did by holding on to the property, because there were others. My father's 73. There were others who was in his age bracket who were striving to sell the property. For money that they may have needed for whatever reason. I would say to him, don't be mad, right, with your grandmother. But what I would say to him is that you have to speak to her, and convey your feelings about being able to sell. I mean, being able to hold on to the property. But then you got to go to work, right? You have to start creating new legacy. You have to start creating a new legacy. You say, like, somebody bought
and
that land before. You got your pension. You need to go and find some land and buy it. And this time, what you do is you make a commitment that the land will not be sold.
He did that.
That's right.
Okay, so now he has to come to terms with what has happened, and then but what he doesn't want to do is you know, lose any type of relationship with his grandmother. That's not something that I would advise, because you're gonna feel regretful and sorrowful about that when they're not here any longer, and you didn't take the time and opportunity to sit down and talk with them and speak with them about whatever it may be, positive or negative. But do not lose that time and get caught up on that part of it and then say, mm-hmm. oh, I don't want to even deal with her because of what she's done. No, we got to operate with a level of forgiveness with one another, a level of empathy with one another, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to heal. We're not going to be able to heal holding on to grudges. We're not going to be able to heal holding on to things that we don't understand. He needs to talk with her, find out what her mind state was, and then see where she was coming from, you know?
Yeah,
but,
well,
don't allow that time
why.
To pass, you know? Don't allow that time to pass without doing so.
Yeah, I'll forward that part about, you know, not being bitter and all that. But a lot of what you said he's already done. And the circumstance is that, you know, with her being 91, she lives with one of our siblings. And it's very hard for him to get time with her because of the sibling that's hovering over, you know. But,
right,
Reminded
him work
of,
Brother,
yeah, reminded him of the
Brother
elder
Herbie, you there?
Kid.
We're going to have to wrap it up now.
Yeah.
We're getting close to time. Thank you, Nana B, for calling
in.
Today. We got just a few minutes left.
All righty.
Thank you for the dialogue.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It. Keep calling. And, we really want to give you a voice. Closing is for you, Brother Hassan, as we wrap up the show today, and Sister Krista. Again, great show and great information. Continue to plug forward. Final comments, Sister Krista, and then over to you, Brother Hassan.
Just to reiterate how we have to leave a legacy for our children's children, you know. It starts with us, and it can very well grow into great, other great things. And you can't expect that our children is going to do it all the same, but as long as you set the foundation, it will flow. And that's all
right.
I have to
say. All right. Wrap it up for us.
Yes. And what I want to stress to everybody, I want to go back to the principle of umoja, right? Unity. You know, we're going to be all or nothing at the end of the day. We must understand that no man or woman is an island unto themselves in this thing, in this struggle that we're in. And in doing that, we must know that we're all interconnected, right? Take time to reach out. Take time to learn. Educate yourself. Take time. Be inspired to reach out to your brothers and sisters and say, yo, what can we do together? You know, we all know the analogy of the fist, right? With one finger, you can do not much, right? You can push a button. You can point the way, right? But with all five, balled up into a fist, you can do more together than you can do apart. And so this is the key to our liberation. Our unity is the key. Our unity is something that our ancestors, that our ancestors have championed many times. Throughout slavery, we were all black and we were all being oppressed, and so we were all unified. You had many different tribes coming together, sometimes not even speaking the same tongue, but we will use the talking drum to communicate.
All right,
with
Brother Hassan, we got to wrap it up.
You know, so.
Great show, thank you, brothers and sisters. Oh yeah. Tune in next week. Oh, 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 yeah.